Welcome to Radio IQ's Virginia On Demand for this Wednesday. It's a daily podcast from Radio IQ featuring the top stories across Virginia. I'm Jeff Bossert. Virginians making less than $15 an hour could see a raise in the coming years thanks to new legislation that got out of a House of Delegates committee Tuesday afternoon. Brad Kuttner has this report.
The last time they had a trifecta, Virginia Democrats tried to raise the state's minimum wage, but the incremental effort was slow and efforts to speed it up were vetoed by former Governor Glenn Youngkin. A new effort, backed by Governor Abigail Spanberger, got out of a House of Delegates committee Tuesday. Here's the bill's patron, Hampton Democratic Delegate Gian Ward.
We need a strong minimum wage in Virginia that uplifts families, many of whom are struggling. They're struggling to make ends meet.
But Republican Minority Leader Terry Kilgore argued it would drive out small businesses, especially those in his rural, lower-income Gate City district.
All you folks that come in here and say that this is great, it's going to raise everybody. What it's going to do in rural areas of the state where I live, we're right on the border of Tennessee, North Carolina, Kentucky, and West Virginia. Those businesses are going to move because it's cheaper to do business in the other states.
The bill passed along party lines. Its next stop is the House Appropriations Committee. While jokingly referred to as a legislative graveyard for bills that impact state coffers, the minimum wage efforts costs are estimated to be in the tens of millions by 2028, when the full $15 an hour would go into effect. This effort is likely to survive as long as Democrats keep their majorities in both chambers. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
State health officials are reporting a confirmed case of measles in a preschool-aged child in Northern Virginia. The child had recently traveled internationally. This case, the third reported in Virginia this year, is not related to a separate case involving a child reported on January 11th. The Virginia Department of Health says the child in this latest case may have been exposed at a PM Pediatric Urgent Care in Woodbridge and the Emergency Department at Inova Children's Hospital, as well as the Women's and Children's Building at that facility in Falls Church. Any further exposure sites identified will be posted to the Department of Health's measles website. Coming up in a little bit, an upcoming art exhibit in Salem asks visitors to immerse themselves in a fictitious society called the Cedars.
You find artifacts that are actually in the show, like there's a cookbook.
A little bit later on, Amy Leffler talks to artist Jake Smith about how he hopes it builds questions about our own current society. Democrat Garrett McGuire won a special election for a Northern Virginia House seat Tuesday. He defeated Republican Christopher Cardiff in the race for District 17, filling the vacancy left by longtime Democrat Mark Sickles, who's joined Governor Abigail Spanberger's administration as Secretary of Finance. This will allow Democrats to retain the seat based in Fairfax County. McGuire will serve the rest of Sickles' term, which runs through 2027. Virginia has one of the longest early voting periods in the country, and Michael Pope tells us that it's here to stay.
Republicans have an affordability agenda that Democrats are rejecting, saving money by scaling back Virginia's 45 days of early voting. Senator Kristi Newcraig is a Republican from Chesapeake who introduced a bill that would pare down early voting to 15 days.
Back in the day, we used to have the October surprise, and now we pretty much have to have the August surprise. Or when there is an October surprise, sometimes it's too late to cast a vote. And as a candidate, I like to be out there and meet my voters, whether they vote for me or not. I still represent them, and I just can't be out there and miss work for 45 days plus be in this part-time General Assembly.
Senator Mark Peek is a Republican from Lynchburg who introduced a bill that would reduce early voting to 10 days. And he says all those days of early voting add up.
How many days we have for the April-May election, whatever we do for congressional August, and then 45 days for the November election. We might end up with 170, 180 days of voting. That will be something. Mm-hmm. It's really too much of a burden.
Both of those bills were rejected by a Senate committee this week. Reporting from the Capitol in Richmond, I'm Michael Pope.
Democrats and Republicans from Southwest Virginia agree. Appalachian Power ratepayers have seen unsustainable bill increases, and something has to be done. Brad Kuttner has this report.
APCO bills are just too darn high.
That's Roanoke Delegate Sam Rasul speaking at a press conference in support of changes to the regional power company's regulations, which he and others say could positively impact power bills. Republican Senator David Söderlein, who also represents the Roanoke area, is looking for changes to the State Corporation Commission, the body that governs Virginia's power monopolies, including, quote, subsidizing utility decisions that raise bills without improving reliability or service. Even he admitted it was a bit hard to explain.
We can make this a much smarter system, and a system that will work to ensure that we have reliable electricity at a fair cost.
But the SEC, a kind of administrative court, doesn't move quickly. Steve Hainer from the conservative Thomas Jefferson Institute likes the regulatory angle on wrangling power bills. And while he hasn't seen the specific proposals pitched Tuesday, Hainer said they may take time to show up for ratepayers.
SEC is slow. There's no question about it. Things that would pass this year, you might see an impact in 2 or 3 years. But if you're running an economy of this size, a state of this size, that's kind of how things happen.
Legislators are also targeting APCO's rate of return, their profit margins. But history suggests that rate is volatile, fluctuating from 4 to almost 10% over the last two decades. Still, Rasul said the regulated nature of APCO means there's room to cut. In Richmond, I'm Brad Kuttner.
In a statement, Appalachian Power says its rates have actually gone down, and it has been below the authorized rate of return in the last decade. It said the company will continue to pursue additional affordability measures. Much of Virginia is currently experiencing drought conditions, a phenomenon that was also present for stretches during 2025. Officials with the Smith Mountain Lake Association say those dry conditions led to lower water quality for streams feeding into the lake. The group sampled 20 streams in both the spring and fall of last year, which are used to produce an annual score for each stream. Only half of the sampled streams showed a satisfactory health rating last year, compared to 65% in 2024. The lake is currently experiencing low water levels as well. However, officials with the group say a return to normal rainfall should lead to improved stream health. The federal government released new dietary guidelines recently, advising Americans to eat fewer processed foods. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins say the new guidelines will help reduce chronic diseases. Roxy Todd spoke with a nutrition expert at Virginia Tech about how these new guidelines align with previous nutritional advice.
The new guidelines emphasize eating lots of fresh fruits, vegetables, and whole grains,
which most Americans don't consume, whether they're kids or whether they're adults.
Vivica Craik is an associate professor of nutrition policy at Virginia Tech. She says this emphasis on whole foods is similar to previous dietary guidelines and is backed up by lots of research. But she says other parts of the guidelines have generated more of a mixed response among nutrition experts. She also points out that while the guidelines recommend eating high-quality meats without added sugars, they don't prioritize eating protein from non-meat sources, like beans. She says nutritionists in the U.S. and in many other countries have been moving towards promoting people to eat more beans, legumes, and high-protein grains like quinoa, and less meat. If you do choose to eat red or processed meat, she advises limiting that to 1 to 3 servings a week.
Because that will lower your risk of cardiovascular disease and certain types of cancer, particularly colorectal cancer.
And cases of colorectal cancer are rising across the U.S. Craig says getting protein from non-meat sources is also better for the planet because it produces less greenhouse gas emissions. In Blacksburg, I'm Roxy Todd.
This note of disclosure, Radio IQ is a service of Virginia Tech. The Olin Galleries at Roanoke College will host local artist Jake Smith's upcoming exhibit, Thoughts and Prayers. The show opens Friday and is a retrospective of sorts of Smith's work over the last decade, but also introduces many recent pieces of digital, mixed media, and even interactive art. Amy Leffler has this preview.
Jake Smith's driving artistic philosophy includes not only creating visually engaging work, but also a platform for two-way communication.
If you're not communicating an idea, it's not art, it's decoration. Decoration's great. I'm a commercial artist. I make decorative things all the time. Art is a communication of an idea. If there's not an underlying back and forth between the creator and the viewer, you know, that's not art.
Smith's upcoming show, Thoughts and Prayers, is comprised of two parts and fills both sides of the gallery space in Olin Hall on the campus of Roanoke College. The first part of the exhibit focuses on large graphic signage and language that emphasizes the ironies incongruencies and snarky, judgmental language of modern society, and could serve as memes in and of themselves on social media. Conceptually, the other side of the gallery is made up of works that center around a fictitious society conceived by Smith called the Cedars. That's S-E-E-D-E-R-S. Smith's work is heavily influenced by his upbringing in Appalachia, and the upcoming show is a smorgasbord of political commentary, absurdities, and contradictions that mirror our present-day culture, but based on a type of Appalachian mysticism practiced by the made-up traditions of the Cedars.
Specifically, they really use the cherry tree as an icon and a symbol of the life cycle.
And that's why visitors will see references to cherries. One piece depicts a figure with a golden cherry for a head lying on a sleigh covered in colorful plastic flowers. Smith also has on offer currency, such as coins and bills with cherries on them, which visitors can use to operate interactive pieces of the show. Another way visitors can engage with the exhibit is to scan the artifacts of the Cedar culture to learn more about their rituals, beliefs, and iconography.
You find artifacts that are actually in the show. Like, there's a cookbook, and you can scan that cookbook, and it'll take you right to that section of the history, and it talks about the importance of food in their culture.
The artifacts of the Cedar culture prompt questions about our own society. For Smith, art can be a better vehicle than other forms of communication like journalism or science to create a bridge that might act to disarm people no matter where they fall on the socio-political spectrum.
We are siloed in our populations. We find our in-group and we stick with them and we defend them without even thinking about it a lot of times. I do believe, though, that there are people that are willing to kind of see things in a different way if you are presented with either not a blunted message, but a message that's delivered in a way, you know, putting the treat in some cheese, that sort of thing. And I think that to some degree that's what artists do is, you know, we're going to give you your medicine, but we're going to wrap it in some peanut butter.
Every 2 years, the gallery hosts a juried show, and the winner is afforded space for a solo exhibit. In 2025, Smith won the juried show with a piece called History of the Cedar Nation, comprised of electric candles, plastic cherries, repurposed cabinetry, and a documentary-style slideshow of images from glass negatives projected inside the cabinet.
So this is the first time we've had one artist in show simultaneously.
Talia Logan is the director of Olin Galleries. Logan says Smith's work does not shy away from challenging the viewer, and his work is
very provocative. It brings up a lot of questions, and I think for an educational institution, that's what we should do. Have artwork really kind of start different conversations. Some may be difficult, some might be funny.
No doubt Smith's work will give visitors who meander through the Cedar Nation and its artifacts a lot to think and talk about. In Salem, I'm Amy Leffler.
In the forecast, a touch warmer today, but we are tracking the potential for snow this weekend. Some sun today, possibly a shower or two for far southwest Virginia later on. Winds picking up throughout the day, warmer. Highs in the upper 30s for the Shenandoah Valley to around 50 for Bristol. Mid-40s for Roanoke, 42 in Charlottesville. More clouds tonight, a couple of rain and snow showers possible in the southwest. Breezy, lows in the low 30s for most. Some clouds Thursday starting out, then more sun. Highs in the low 40s to 56 for Danville and Richmond. Friday, more clouds, a little breezy and colder. Highs in the low 30s to mid-40s. And we're monitoring the potential for a significant winter storm this weekend. Stay tuned with Radio IQ throughout the week for the latest. Thanks for listening to Virginia On Demand. This little reminder, subscribe and tell your friends about it. For Radio IQ, I'm Jeff Bosser.